Welcome back to Second Short. It is Monday, January 27th, 2024. And we're going to start off quickly with an injury report update. Unfortunately, today, Colin is out with the flu. He's out with the flu, expected to be back next week. He will return before the Super Bowl, before the end of the playoffs. Luckily, he's not playing in the Pro Bowl, but he's not going to make it to the Pro Bowl because he doesn't want to go. We've got Chiefs-Bills on the screen. I believe my line for Hollywood Brown receptions just hit on that play, so let's go. The Super Bowl is set, by the way, for you guys. We still have two quarters of football to watch here to find the AFC's representative, but the Philadelphia Eagles will be playing in Super Bowl 59 in New Orleans, and we'll figure out as we go. Hopefully, we have a final score by the end of this. I don't know. Depends on how long we take. We just had a face mask there on Worthy. Didn't look like it got called. But things pretty quiet in the MLB this week. What? What happened? Nathan's
here
as well.
That was Hollywood Brown.
That was Hollywood Brown?
Yes.
Sorry. Okay, yeah. So, things pretty quiet this week in the MLB. Not much to discuss there. We got some rumors. We did get a trade earlier today that we'll be talking about. And then I'm going to talk a little bit more about the Profar deal and what it means for the Braves lineup, just because it was like an instant reaction on the podcast last week or on Friday when I saw the move, and I didn't really get much time to think about it and what the lineup might look like. So we'll touch on that a little bit as well in the MLB section. Obviously, we haven't talked about the national championship game since it happened. Nobody's talking about it because it did not matter. Nobody watched it. Ratings were way down. But the Ohio State Buckeyes are national champions. Congrats. You won the first 4-team playoff and the first 12-team playoff, which is pretty cool. I hate Ohio State, and I wish neither of those teams could have won.
I've seen a lot of Ohio State gear in public recently.
Yeah.
That I don't think those people were wearing a little while ago.
Which is funny, because it's like a historically very good program.
I think they lost to Michigan and thought all hope was lost at first.
It's true. I lost hope in them.
Yeah.
I'll say that.
Just started playing good football.
Yeah, no, it was inspired football in the playoffs. So congrats to Ohio State. Congrats to Ryan Day. You just bought yourself a couple more years, maybe as long as you want, in Columbus, but we'll have to see. We're not going to talk at all about the national championship because it's so far removed. Nobody cared about it when it happened, so you definitely don't care about it this week. But before we get into anything, please make sure you're subscribed here on YouTube and you turn on post notifications. Stay up to date with everything we've got going on here. Of course, like the video, give us a comment. Comment your Super Bowl prediction since you know what teams are going to be in there. Of course, follow us on Instagram. Stay up to date with everything we have going on across all of our channels there. Follow us on TikTok and join the Second Short subreddit, r/2ndandshort. And if you're on the podcast platforms, rate 5 stars and give us a follow. Today, we've got the conference championship games, obviously, that we're going to be talking about. And then we talk a little bit of MLB stuff. To fill the college football portion today, we're going to talk a little bit about the transfer portal. We really haven't brought up much. We talked briefly about Carson Beck transferring to Miami, but there's a couple things I want to talk about because there's some interesting teams that have had great off seasons for the transfer portal. There's some players, there's some big names, some good young players that have made some huge moves. So we're going to talk about that. And then if we have some time, I assume we will at the end of this, we're going to play some games, probably a Weddle or two. Just see how things go because I like to keep the mind sharp. As a ball knower, I like to flex that every now and then. But without further ado, let's go ahead and talk about conference championship weekend. In the NFC, the Commanders fall, unfortunately, 23-55. The Eagles put up a 55 spot, the most points scored by a team in an NFC championship game. The Commanders really had me going on that first drive. I really thought we had something there. You convert on fourth twice. You had multiple third down conversions to get to that point. You ran 18 plays, 7-minute drive. And unfortunately, you settle for a field goal when you had fourth and two. It was like the best opportunity you had to go for it on fourth.
Third time's the charm.
Yeah. Look, Dan Quinn had my respect in that first drive. Kicking the field goal, it makes sense. It really does. You don't want to give up that.
Put points on the board early. Yeah. Make the Eagles do something.
Yeah.
Make Saquon do something.
Like what could have happened is they go for it on fourth. They don't get it. And then Saquon just on the first carry gets a longer touchdown.
Exactly.
Because that's exactly what Saquon does. He opens up games with big touchdowns. first play or first carry for him, 60-yard touchdown. Next carry for him, another touchdown, by the way. But that 60-yard touchdown had me thinking we were in for a long day. Yeah. And scoring-wise, we were in for a long day by the Eagles, but I thought it was just going to be them running away. What? Yeah, a huge total. 78 playoff points. Game. Unbelievable. In the NFC Championship game.
Saquon could have had 7 touchdowns in this game.
Yeah, yeah, he really could have. He was insane all day.
Isn't the single game record 7?
I believe the single game record's 7. I think it is, because Alvin Kamara had 6. Couple years ago on Christmas. I believe the single game is 7. But Saquon had 15 carries, 118, 3 touchdowns. He did kind of stop running the ball near the end of the game because they had such a big lead. 6 is the record. Kamara. Yeah. Okay.
So he could have broke the rushing touchdown record in the conference championship. Yeah.
But instead, Jalen Hurts, obviously, tush pushing his way into the end zone 3 times. But one of them, maybe the greatest tush push sequence we have ever seen.
I think it's the worst.
I think it's funny.
I hate it.
It's the funniest sequence we've ever seen.
But I hate it.
Like, watching Frankie Louvu jump over 3 times?
Twice, I think.
But he was real fucking close to going to third.
Oh, he should have.
And then Johnny Newton, I believe, or Jerzon Newton was the one who ended up getting the third one.
He should have done it. I sat there watching it, and I was talking to one of my coworkers right next to me, and I said, he should do it again.
Yeah.
I said, if they get the foul and they have to give him it.
Yeah, in case you guys didn't see it or hear about it, in this situation, they had gotten flagged 3 times already.
As encroachment.
For encroachment. Yes. And they were obviously, you can only move up half the distance to the goal line so many times. But if it's intentional, if anything like that, it's up to the ref's discretion, and they're allowed to award you the score. If they just keep doing
which is a crazy thing.
It's crazy, but I understand why it's in place, because you could literally just like do that over and over and over again.
Until the game's over.
Yeah, and like technically you could keep inching the ball forward. Like,
I don't think they
tiny bit. At some point, yeah, like it already looked like the ball was
the ball for a touchdown.
Yeah,
like most likely. Also, I do want to say I think it was the last encroachment.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody touched anybody.
Yeah. I think that was a neutral zone infraction instead of encroachment.
Oh, okay. I think they called it as encroachment at first.
Maybe.
I was very confused because when they showed the line camera, nobody touched anybody, but then the center moved.
Yeah, and he was probably like, pointing on him for the neutral zone infraction.
No,
that's my idea.
What? It's the right guard or the right tackle. I don't remember which one's which, but he's the one who jumped up and pointed. The center's arm touching the ball moved.
Oh.
And I was like, wait a second. That probably could have been a false start.
Maybe.
Because nobody touched anybody.
Maybe.
But
everything was leaning in the Eagles' direction there, so I get why it doesn't get called against.
Yeah, exactly. Because they were like, oh, well, they probably just did it again.
Yeah.
They would make assume, he probably touched him.
Yeah, it was a safe assumption that the Commanders were probably breaking the rules.
Backed up 5 yards.
Yeah. But seeing Frankie Louvu do the same thing twice, 2 straight plays where he looked like that dude that jumped on that judge, it was absolutely hilarious.
Lying. He was jumping over both lines.
Yeah, yeah, it was impressive.
Jalen Hurts had to back up the second time.
But then
time
like Jalen Hurts literally had the easiest in. Like the one that they finally did score it on was the easiest they will ever get.
Well, yeah, because the Commanders don't want to do anything. They can't try to jump the snap. They couldn't do anything.
Yeah.
They
but what you were saying, I do agree with. I think it would have been funny if they did do it and just force the refs to make that call.
Yes, because then everyone in the world would have been like, that's kind of stupid.
Yeah, that's lame.
They would have been like, oh, that kind of sucks. You had to have the refs give you a touchdown.
Yeah.
Because
I wonder how that works. Does anybody get credited for the touchdown?
I would imagine no. How would you credit somebody?
I bet there was somebody who had like Jalen Hurts over 2.5 rushing touchdowns on like an alternate line. Yeah, wouldn't it? And they're like, dude.
Sirianni gets credit?
Yeah, probably. The turnovers, though, is kind of what killed the Commanders here. The fumbled kickoff was just brutal. It was just kind of a mess. You had 3 lost fumbles, which is just brutal. Did Jaden throw a pick as well, like late in the game? It was a desperation throw. Like, you were down a huge amount in the fourth quarter. Makes sense that something like that happens. It almost kind of sucks that Jaden played a good game and the Commanders, like, coached a good game. They made good calls offensively, especially. Like, Cliff Kingsbury was killing it. It kind of sucks that happened because you can't blame them for losing. They just got beat by the Eagles. Like, the Eagles
were
forcing...
You can blame the defense a little bit.
Kind of, but the Eagles were forcing the turnovers. That was the big thing, is those turnovers that got them those quick points a few times was just the deciding factor, and it's like... That was fantastic work. The trio that was involved in that first fumble, where you have Cooper just wrapping up. I think it was Zacchaeus that got the first. Who was it that had the first fumble? I think it was Deami Brown. Maybe one. I think it was Deami Brown, because I think McNichols fumbled on the kickoff. But Deami Brown, I believe, is the one that got the fumble, and Cooper DeJean was holding him. Zach Bond comes in and punches out. Reed Blankenship jumps on the ball for the fumble recovery. Like, the Eagles played it very well. They were forcing the fumbles. Maybe not the kickoff one. That was a little bit iffy, but they were really forcing these turnovers. I think that was a huge part of it. They also just obviously ran the ball super well. Like, even Will Shipley at the end of this game, breaking off that huge run, 57 yards, almost got into the end zone. He's just maybe a little too white for it.
They
gave him a shot. So he got himself his first career rushing touchdown. But I do want to give Jalen Hurts a little bit of credit just for consistently passing the ball in this game. 20 for 28, 246. We knew he was coming into this with a knee injury, so he wasn't going to run a lot. Still was doing the tush push, but and also the injuries on the offensive line. Like, Cam Jurgens was banged up all week with a back tightness, I think. So he was active, but he wasn't starting. They put Landon Dickerson at center, but I think what happened to Dickerson, and he got hurt pretty quickly, is that you're asking a guy who's always playing guard to do what the center does on top of what he does. So he's doing something new. He knows that I don't really want the center to have to come in and replace me. And you're forcing him to, like, be a part, like, a different role in tush pushes over and over and over again, I think was the biggest part. That's going to wear down a guy who's not used to doing it. Exactly. Like, Cam Jurgens and Jason Kelce in the past were trained to do that.
That's what Dickerson, they ran in practice and everything.
Yeah, and, like, Dickerson, sure, he played some center at Alabama, but he's not...
It's not what he's done for
It's not what he's been doing for, like, forever. And I think that's what got him hurt so quickly, and then Jurgens ends up coming into the game and was fine.
The reason I said the defense was because Washington allowed five different players to have a play over 20 yards.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's probably shouldn't be happening, especially when two of the rushing ones are over 50.
Mm-hmm.
You can't let that happen. And you know, this is a team that
breaks. But I think we all know, like, the
stuff,
Commanders came into this game with a horrible offense. Or a horrible defense.
Yes.
Yeah. A really bad defense. Like, people were putting out the lists of, like, the rookie quarterbacks that have made it to the conference championship and what their scoring defense was. Mm-hmm. The Commanders were the only one outside of the top seven, and they were 17th in the league in scoring defense. Like, just putting that kind of pressure on Jaden Daniels and him still having a good game, and it just clearly falling on the defense was the worst part of this.
Exactly. Like, normally...
And you're missing Daron Payne. On the defensive line, kill
you. First three quarters of a game is normally a pretty good playoff game.
Yeah.
But when your defense can't get you a good stop and get you into good field position, it's going to be hard to win. Especially
and also,
when the
like,
team's just breaking off big plays and scoring on you like this.
Yeah, and like, they were in this game.
Mm-hmm.
They were really in this game. It was like 12-14 at one point, I think, something like that. But, like, missing out on that 2-point conversion in the second quarter just kind of, like, sucked the life out of you a little bit. And then, like, you just keep going through this game, and the Eagles just keep chipping away.
At the start of the fourth.
Yeah.
Like, that's
no,
that's
it was
not
a game.
That's not insurmountable.
No, it was a game.
You could definitely come back from that.
But yeah, like, the Eagles just won. And I'll say this. If you're looking at the talent of these two rosters and what they did throughout the season, the Eagles are the team that deserves to be in the Super Bowl out of the two. But, like, I don't know. It was fun
this
to
was
watch what the Commanders
really
did.
Really good defense going up against one of the worst defenses.
Yeah, that was the biggest thing. And I think most people kind of acknowledge that going into this game is like, because like I even said on Friday's episode, like, I just hope this game doesn't get out of hand. Like, I hope the Eagles don't just like run away with it. And they did in the second half, but like, this was an entertaining game until the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
It really was.
I was enjoying every little bit I got to see of it.
Yeah.
Until basically after the tush push sequence of events. Yeah. It started to just be like, all right, here we go. Time to turn this off and do something else.
Exactly.
I might go watch the news or something.
Yeah, it was a little bit hard to watch in the fourth quarter. But I love what the Commanders did this season. Shout out to Dan Quinn. He wasn't allowed to go out and win a Super Bowl. Nope. So that makes me happy. I wanted the Commanders to make it and lose the Super Bowl so that Dan Quinn just keeps that. He can't beat what he did with the Falcons. But it was a great first season for the Commanders all around. Dan Quinn, Cliff Kingsbury is the OC. Obviously, Jaden Daniels is going to be a rookie of the year. And like Mike Sainer is still in the defense, a rookie as well, who was like one of their best defensive players all year.
Fun fact about these two teams. The Commanders have three players that make over $10 million a year. The Eagles have 11, 10.
That's crazy.
So
and go ahead and just throw Zach Bond into the mix as well for this offseason.
Exactly. There'll be a couple guys who now get over 10.
Yeah.
I would imagine. Here you go. What do you think the Commanders need next year for the defense? What positions do you think they should be trying to get in the draft or get
everything?
Trades?
I think they're really missing a great free safety. I think like there's a lot of good teams around the league and good defense around the league, and they all have great free safeties. Quan Martin, just not cutting it.
Chin's not bad.
No, Chin's not bad. He's a good, strong safety. But like when you look around the league and at free safety, it's like, okay, what teams have good defenses? The Ravens, Kyle Hamilton. The Eagles have C.J. Gardner-Johnson. And you just kind of keep going down the list, and it's like Minkah Fitzpatrick, Jesse Bates, even for the Falcons. When their defense is playing well, Jesse Bates is playing well. A lot of the best defenses in the league having a great free safety, but they're hard to come by. They're typically a guy that gets converted to that position, or maybe just like a guy that was a corner and a safety in college, and he ends up being a safety. It's hard to find a good free safety. Brian Branch as well for the Lions. But I think that's what you're missing, but it's hard to just go out and find that unless it was somebody you pick up in free agency. I think you probably need better edge rushers. You gave up your edge rushers last year.
You need a young, talented edge rusher,
I think. Yeah, like
a
you gave up.
Reverse or a Brady
yeah,
Fisk.
Yeah, somebody like that kind of player in this draft, and there's such good edge rushers in this draft class. Even though the Commanders are going to be picking pretty late, like you're still going to get a guy that's like worthy of the first round where they're picking at edge.
Do you think Lattimore, Sainer, still in Igbinogene? Is that how you pronounce it? I don't know. Are going to cut it as DBs, though? I watched Marshawn Lattimore get cooked on a 4th-and-5 where the Eagles got a 20-yard gain.
Yeah, like Lattimore's weird because his game is physicality.
Yes, he tries
trying to fight you.
Beat you up at the line. Yeah. And not let you keep going. Problem is, some guys don't give a fuck.
Yeah, well, and it's going to be...
They're going to keep going.
It's really St. Juiced and Lattimore, and then Sainer Still is the nickel. I would assume Sainer Still is going to take the starting spot over St. Juiced, because he's been pretty bad for the entire time he's been in the league. If it's Marshawn and Sainer Still, and you pick up somebody else to be the nickel, I think you're in a much better situation. But like I said, I think the free safety opens things up because then they can line up in the nickel as well and help out on the defense. So I think that's the biggest spots. Obviously, Bobby Wagner's up there in age, so maybe you are going to start looking at a different middle linebacker.
A young talented
guy
who can step in and be a leader at linebacker.
Yeah. And that's something you can address in like the third round of the draft. That's typically where like you're going to find your best like middle linebackers. But I think let's move on and talk a little bit about... Oh, what do you have?
What would you grade the Commander season now that they've been eliminated?
I'm giving them like an A-.
I like that.
I think you can't... I've said this when like me and Luke did end of the season. You can't give an A-plus to a team that didn't win the Super Bowl.
Yes.
Sorry. Or I guess make the Super Bowl.
I would say they're either a B-plus or an A-, just because the defense was so
good. Yeah, like there was a lot of moments throughout this season where it was like, whoa, the Commanders shouldn't have been in that spot.
It's like Jaden Daniels had to destroy the other team so that his defense didn't matter.
Yeah, but then there was also games where it was like the Bears game. Bears game, it was only close because the defense actually did what they needed to. Obviously, the Bears offense wasn't awesome. But at that time, those two teams were coming into that game very similar spots. So, yeah, I would give the Commanders an A-. I think you never could have anticipated an NFC championship berth. Like, if they would have just barely beaten the Bucks and then, like, lost to the Lions, I think that would have been a B or a B plus. But I think the win over the Lions just it took me over the edge. Score update here. Now that we're coming into the end of the third, so we'll move on to Bills Chiefs. Bills take the lead 22-21. Who scored this last touchdown? I think it is James Cook. Also, Bang, another line hits. James Cook over 14.5 longest rush.
Nice. I took him for an anytime.
Nice. Nice. I do think I have a Josh Allen anytime touchdown, so we're going to be looking out for a rushing touchdown. And the Bills just got the ball back with the lead, about to probably take this one into the fourth quarter this drive. So big stuff going on here. I do want to talk about a couple things that I already saw happen in the first half of this game. Really sloppy drive at the end of the first quarter by the Chiefs that allowed the Bills to kind of stay here and quickly get back into it. You lose the fumble on the handoff. Just brutal, especially when it's like two plays after you almost lost the fumble, where like Patrick Mahomes just wasn't holding the ball tight enough. Was literally it. He saw the pressure was right there. He wasn't holding the ball tight enough. It just gets knocked out of his hands pretty far too. Unfortunately, I think there was an offsides that brought that one back. But then two plays later, you still mess up again. It's like that stuff you got to avoid. But then the Chiefs also did a lot of things to kind of counteract that. You had like a big special teams play on a big return, got you great field position late in the second quarter and got you some points on the board. But then the Bills, that late touchdown in the first half, beautiful throw, amazing catch while being interfered with by Mac Hollins for that touchdown, a 34-yard touchdown to preserve some life in the first half. Because like at one point, this is, you know, it was what? It was like 21-9 or something. 21-10, I think.
I think it was 10.
Yeah, it was 21-10. Yeah, it was 21-10. And it just, everything was moving in the Chiefs' direction. 21-10. Everything's moving in the Chiefs' direction after the back-to-back touchdowns. And that deep touchdown was huge for the Bills' confidence. You kick the extra point, it gets an offside, you make the extra point, you take the point off the board to try and do a tush-push with Josh Allen. They just watched the film. They watched the film. They said it on the broadcast. There was a note that the Chiefs had been talking about, which is if Josh Allen's going to do the tush-push, he likes to go to the left. He went to the left. They absolutely crushed him.
You got to go straight up the center's ass.
Yeah, you do. That's the best way to do it. Ask Jason Kelce. He's had
Jalen Hurts in his ass plenty.
I was about to say he's had a lot of Hurts in his ass.
At least say his full name, so it's not as bad.
Nope. but now into the second quarter, Bills taking the lead. Mac Hollins having a good day with that 34-yard reception for the touchdown. Khalil Shakir, as per usual, being extremely consistent. 5 targets, 5 receptions, 41 yards, just doing his job. Amari Cooper getting a lot more usage than maybe we anticipated. 3 targets, 3 catches, 28 yards.
His line was 2.5.
Yeah, wow. No, he doesn't get a lot of love. He's just kind of there to occupy a defender, and it helps them out a lot. Let's see, Kansas City. Xavier Worthy's having a great game. I think he had 2 rushes already for like 15 yards, 16 yards. 2 rushes for 16 yards for Worthy, which I also hit on. I had over 3.5 rushing yards for Worthy. But he's got 5 receptions, 62 yards on 5 targets. He's having a great day and a touchdown. Hollywood Brown getting involved early. He's got 5 targets, 3 receptions, 35. Juju had a big 31-yard reception early in the game as well. And D-Hop's got 1 reception. Kelsey's only got 1 reception on 3 targets. That over 70.5, not looking great for me for Kelsey. Really thought he was going to be a big part of this one. But we'll have to see. A lot of football to be played here in the fourth quarter. You have the Patrick Mahomes lost fumble, like we talked about, on the handoff. Josh has dropped the ball twice and recovered it himself. One of them, I think, was on a low snap, and the other one was just like a weird position. But shout out Matt Milano as well for the sack earlier. Mike Dana's got a sack on the Chiefs side. The only 2 sacks in this game. Tyler Bass also drilling a 53-yard field goal to start off the game for the Bills was pretty
something
big.
Jake Elliott couldn't do.
Yeah, Jake Elliott missed from, I think, 54.
Yeah.
Yeah, missed from 54. Bad miss, too. It was never in. Like, sometimes you have one where you, like, kick it up the middle and it just kind of fades out right. It was way right and, like, kind of started to come back but never made it.
I think while you're talking MLB, I'm going to look at what the field goal and extra point percentage is for the season, because been a weird one.
I thought it was absolutely hilarious when I went to, like, I was looking through the lines on Better, and Jake Elliott, his only 3 options were, like, the over 42.5 field goal, like a boost, the boosted 49.5 or whatever they always do, and then 2.5 extra points, mm-hmm. which he did end up getting. But like, it's very funny that they didn't even let you do like kicking points or like a three, like, you know, 2.5 field goals, because it was just like, I don't know.
Sketchy.
But yeah, the Bills, where are they out on the field right now? Or I guess you could just pull the game up. Looking at like their 40.
About
rush right there.
Almost the 50 now?
Yeah. Still looking for a couple more yards from Ray Davis. I have 9.5 if you could be monitoring that while I go through MLB.
What is it?
Ray Davis over 9.5 rushing yards. Okay. All right, yeah. Let's get started with the MLB. And we start with the trade that happened today, a big one. Cubs continue to just ransack the Houston Astros. They acquire Ryan Pressly, the closer for the Astros. He's been the closer for the last four seasons. Unbelievable in the postseason. One of the biggest reasons why they beat the Phillies in 2022 in that World Series. And, yeah, I just – Ryan Pressly's been such a staple for Houston for so long. It's kind of crazy to see him leave like that. I did just see Ray Davis just got a carry. I don't know how many yards that puts him at, but so yeah, Pressly had to waive his no trade clause to make this trade happen. Houston sent some money over to cover part of that $14 million salary. What? He's at 4 yards?
He's at 4 yards.
He's at 4 yards, so still need a little more work from Ray Davis. Are they going to call him short on that first down? Not sure who ran that ball, but seems like they're calling him short. And like, the Cubs didn't even really have to give up anything. They give up a right-handed pitcher, Juan Baio, who's been pitching in like advanced A. So certainly not like a crazy haul for Ryan Pressly, but an extremely good bullpen arm for the Cubs. And it seems like the Cubs have found the recipe to success, which is if you want to win World Series, choose the team that's won like the most World Series in the last 5 years. It seems like a recipe for success, but everybody said their offseason last year was good, and they didn't make the playoffs. So we'll have to see how the Cubs pan out. But I do love this move. I think Ryan Pressly's awesome and an absolute legend. It doesn't matter what you think about the Houston Astros. Ryan Pressly, unbelievable. I think the last four seasons, he has 14 saves in the postseason, zero blown saves. It's unbelievable. We'll keep it with the Astros. It seems like they're leaving the door open to bring back Bregman. As the offseason goes on, a guy like Alex Bregman doesn't want to still be looking for a team when spring training opens up. The Astros will have the chance to bring him back. And in this event, there's a couple of weird things that could happen. I think no matter what, it's going to be a weird outcome. The first one would be immediately going out and trading Isak Paredes, who you just got in the Kyle Tucker trade, just so you can bring in an outfielder to fill in left field, because the Astros were one of the teams that were in on Profar before he signed with the Braves. So, Houston now kind of scrambling for somebody to patrol left field now. Selling off Paredes, probably not a bad option, but I would like to see what he can do in Houston. The other option would be that Yordan Alvarez goes back to playing some left field every day and Paredes goes to DH. And then maybe the most interesting of the bunch is that Paredes would move to second base, which he has played a couple of games second base in the MLB. Not much, primarily a third base and first base guy. But that would move Jose Altuve to playing left field, which putting the 5'9 guy in left field seems crazy. Now, it's not like he's just like losing the ability to rob home runs over the absolutely enormous wall in left field in Houston, but like, It's so against the grain, I guess, to put that short of a guy out in the outfield. I'm sure he could do it, but like maybe if he was a young player. But he's like 34 years old. Putting a 34, 35-year-old Jose Altuve in left field for the first time in his career, I think, would be kind of insane, just so you can get Isak Paredes and Alex Bregman in the same lineup. I still think Bregman should go to the Red Sox, but I don't even know if he wants to go to the Red Sox. I don't know if there's a lot of people that really do, because it hasn't necessarily been as good of a free agent destination as it is a trade destination this offseason. Next two things are about the Mets. So the Mets had whatever their version of their like fan fest is this past week, and Steve Cohen was pretty honest. Actually, the end of this quote is him saying, I'm being brutally honest. And he was being asked about the potential of bringing back Pete Alonso. He said, the reality is we're moving forward and we continue to bring in players. As we continue to bring in players, the reality is it becomes harder to fit Pete into what is a very expensive group of players that we already have. That's where we are. I'm being brutally honest. You don't see that kind of, you know, transparency from an MLB owner or anybody that's making decisions. To just straight up be asked about it and just give the real answer is kind of crazy to see, which I respect Steve Cohen for. The things I hate about Steve Cohen, he owns the Mets. He spends a lot of money, all that kind of stuff. But that is a respectable move. And I think a lot of baseball fans would agree. You don't see a lot of transparency from the decision makers on an MLB team, especially when it comes to free agency. So respect Steve Cohen. But also, if Pete Alonso never played baseball again, I would not be mad. So I don't really care. But I like the move by Steve Cohen. The next thing I have to talk about is how bad these Mets jerseys are. They are so good right now at ruining classic jerseys. They ruined the black jersey by switching from white outline to orange outline. This blue jersey might be impossible to read. Like, I'm not kidding. Nathan, can you pull up the picture of this new Mets blue jersey? It doesn't even look right on camera. I think on TV, you won't be able to read the letters on the front. It's so bad. And also, pairing that up with how garbage these jerseys have been this last year, I know they're changing them up again. It's just, they look horrendous. They look so bad. And, like, the blue jerseys for the Mets have, you know, I'm not a fan of the color scheme, but they've been fine. But this new look is atrocious. It is so bad. I really don't think it's going to be very visible on the field. Like, the orange outline doesn't pop enough on that jersey.
It looks like a Gators baseball jersey.
Yeah, it does. It looks a lot like Florida. And also, I hate, absolutely hate an MLB jersey that doesn't button up.
Yeah, wait, I just
hate it.
That it doesn't have buttons.
Doesn't have buttons.
This is a t-shirt.
Exactly. Exactly. Unless it's like one
That's
of the
vest
type jerseys. That's going to cost
me $195 too.
Yeah, exactly. That's a lot of money, which, look, none of us are buying that damn jersey.
No, ew.
But, yeah, I think the back especially is going to be really hard to see on TV.
It's hard enough to see on this TV in a picture.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. In those... Those TV cameras are a lot different. I'm sure they tested those things before making this jersey. I can't help but think that's going to look really bad on TV. But, you know, it's a matter of time. We'll have to see.
What do we know, right?
Yeah, exactly. What do we know about baseball? Final thing I do want to talk a bit about Jerickson Profar to the Braves because, I you know, we didn't have all the details, but a 3-year contract, $42 million, I believe, is the figure there. I love it. We needed to go out and do something, and I'm so glad that we did. That's kind of the biggest thing here, is that we had to make a move. We had to make a new move because we were having like a nightmare offseason, and the Braves just don't do that, really. Alex Anthopoulos kind of made sure that hasn't happened, and this was a really quiet offseason. I still think there's things to address. I still think we need to add to the bullpen. You could maybe add an arm at the end of the rotation, but this is the right first step. He's probably on opening day going to bat second in the lineup. You'll probably go Harris, which I love how this lineup's going to start off when you go lefty. I believe Profar's primarily a lefty. I'll pull it up myself here real quick. He's either a lefty or a switch. I just can't remember. He is...
You got it.
A switch. He is a switch hitter. So, yeah, I think going lefty, switch, and then you're going to go to a righty with Austin Riley at third, Olsen 4, Ozuna 5. Like, I absolutely love how things kind of shake out here in this lineup. I think it could really work out well. I think it works extremely well, and then you're going to have another switch hitter probably batting like sixth with Ozzy Albies, who also has the potential to move up in the lineup if he looks really good to start the year. Obviously, we won't have Acuna to start, it's hard to argue that once Acuna is back and fully healthy, if Michael Harris is playing up to expectation and Jurickson Profar is playing even close to what we got out of him last year, this is going to be the best outfield in the major in Major League Baseball. I would say I'm biased as hell, extremely biased. But when you have a Gold Glove, a perennial Gold Glove caliber center fielder in Michael Harris, you have Jurickson Profar, who, yes, you know, one time he was the top prospect in the MLB over Mike Trout and Bryce Harper, and hasn't done anything in his 10-year career until last year in his, like, age 30 or 31 years, or 30, 31 season. If he shows up and he's pretty good, I'll be happy. For now, it looks like Jared Kelenic and Brian De La Cruz are going to be fighting it out for reps in right field. That's going to be settled in spring training. As of right now, Kelenic obviously kind of has the incumbent status as a player that was already in the lineup last year, and I'd love to see him play well, but you know, you can't count on it. And until Ronald comes back, if we just win games, that's the biggest thing. If we can just win some games before Ronald's return, I'm going to feel really good once he comes back and gets settled into the lineup, because you can essentially just kind of shift things down a little bit. I'm sure Profar or Harris drops deeper into the lineup once Ronald comes back, because Ronald's obviously going to be batting leadoff. But I do think that the Profar move is definitely a step in the right direction. I don't think we need to go out and get any more bats. I think we're pretty well set there, even with Acuna starting off the year hurt. I think it's really just, go out and grab a bullpen arm if you can, because there's still a lot of them available. And when you lose Minter this offseason and you lost a bunch of arms in starting rotation, it's really nice to have that flexibility in the bullpen. I think I'm going to wrap it up there for MLB and do a little bit of talk here on the transfer portal. Lot of things that, you know, we've kind of let fly because we were a little too focused on the games that were happening in college football. But obviously, with how the transfer portal works at the moment, you can just you kind of transfer before things are over. And then some guys that like the guys that play in the championship game, shit, there's a ton of Notre Dame guys that enter the portal. Same for Ohio State. A ton of those guys enter the portal, and they're just in a really bad spot. Obviously they're looking at a revised model for the transfer portal. And honestly, the transfer portal might just be garbage. Like, we don't even know if we're going to have a transfer portal, because the guy from Wisconsin who just transferred to Miami, I can't remember his name, is just totally might just rewrite the idea of the transfer portal, because it's just a made up thing. It's just a way for teams to be allowed to talk to you. If you're just like, hey, I'm going to go play at Miami because I'm good enough, and you play at Wisconsin, and you just say, well, I'm a student. You are a student athlete, but you're a student. So I'm just going to transfer to Miami. And if I get accepted into Miami, I can go there and I can play. And they could offer me a scholarship on day one as soon as I'm a player. And they could give me all the NIL money they want.
Wait, what?
That's exactly what this guy just did.
So he just transferred
schools. He transferred schools. Teams. Nope. He just transferred.
Genius.
Yeah.
It is genius. People had to have been doing that,
though. No.
Really?
Nope. First guy. I think he sued for the ability to do it.
Yeah, because, like, how is that not allowed?
You can look it up and maybe find something.
All you'd have to do is forfeit your scholarship, because your scholarship's to that school. Say, oh, I have good
grades.
Xavier
Lucas.
Let me go somewhere else.
Yeah.
Transfer to that school, because a lot of people transfer colleges as normal students. That's just what you do. And then be like, oh, I'm going to go walk on at football tryouts.
Yeah. Okay.
And then they'd be let's give you a scholarship.
Yeah, I've got the article here from CBS Sports.
What's it got?
Wisconsin defensive back Xavier Lucas is at the center of a major impending legal battle after his lawyer announced that he would transfer to Miami. The biggest thing is that he entered a revenue sharing agreement with Wisconsin, I believe. So it says, the saga began when Lucas asked Wisconsin to enter his name into the transfer portal after one season with the school, and they denied his request, claiming that the two-year revenue-sharing agreement he signed on December 2nd is binding. He additionally signed a separate deal with Wisconsin's NIL collective. The bylaws mandate that universities must enter players into the transfer portal within 2 business days of a request. So the way the transfer portal worked is you had to tell your team to put you in it. Once they put you in it, which they had to do within 2 days of a request, then then you could start talking to teams and people could, you know, you could start fielding NIL offers and whatever.
A different agreement?
But because he signed a revenue sharing agreement for when revenue sharing becomes allowed at the start of this next year, they thought they could just deny his request to enter the transfer portal because he was in a binding agreement for revenue sharing. So the quote here, under the terms of the agreement between Xavier and Wisconsin Athletics, it remains in effect and enforceable. Badger student athletes who have signed these agreements expect Wisconsin Athletics to honor their terms. Sorry, an ad just popped up and moved me. Yeah, Badger student athletes who have signed these agreements expect... What was that?
Mahomes' 10-yard rushing touchdown.
Mahomes with a 10-yard rushing touchdown to regain the lead, 10 minutes left in the fourth quarter. Big. Huge.
Oh, he just failed.
Horrible spike right there. Horrible failed spike.
You would think
Patrick
a quarterback could throw a spike.
Yeah. Yeah, it's part of your job. So yeah, it says, in turn, Wisconsin Athletics relies on the student athlete representation in signing these agreements that they will do the same. Sure. They also said a request to enter the transfer portal after entering into such an agreement is inconsistent with the representations and mutual understanding of the agreement. So they're suing because he just went ahead and transferred schools. Because you can do that. But now Wisconsin's trying to say that Miami was tampering because he wasn't in the transfer portal. But he requested to be put in the transfer portal, which they are supposed to be doing.
Very interesting.
Yeah. And
whoever the judge is in that court case, I apologize.
Yeah. Well, and the NCAA put out a statement saying the NCAA rules do not prevent a student athlete from unenrolling from an institution, enrolling in a new institution, and competing immediately.
Yeah, because... Technically, you still have to win
just
the job,
student.
And you're a walk-on.
Yeah.
You don't have a scholarship.
Yeah. And that's the thing. You could have done this back in the day, too. Before they changed the transfer portal, you could have just been like, oh, I don't want to go here anymore. I want to go there and just play on the team immediately.
People transfer colleges all the time.
But the way that athletics transfers have been seen was you have to tell your team, and then you can start fielding offers from teams.
Well, according to Ohio State, Jeremiah Smith's been getting offers.
Yeah.
And he's not in the portal.
No. Well, I guess NIL can reach out all they want. A school can't offer.
Because they're not.
Yeah, they're
the
technically
school.
Not part of the school. But yeah,
apparently
this has some.
$3 million to end.
Yeah. This has some serious things that could come out of it. So we'll definitely be talking about that if anything does happen.
He's like the first big one for this.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of insane.
I would imagine
nobody's
some
really
small,
thought to do it anyway.
There's got to be some small, like, players that never played kind of thing. Like, people that were already walk ons.
Yeah.
Or just like, yeah, you know what? Fuck it. I'm just going to transfer back to my home state or something and try to go play there and maybe they'll give me a scholarship.
Maybe. Okay, well, let's actually talk about the stuff I wanted to talk about here for the transfer portal, but that was definitely important stuff. I want to start with Texas Tech. They're having an unbelievable offseason in the transfer portal, easily the best transfer portal class of the offseason, which is kind of insane. You want to just go to all. I think you were under ACC when you were pulling that up. You go to school and then all.
I was wondering why they didn't show up.
Oh, maybe. You can go to On3's team rankings. That's what I was using. But Texas Tech just kind of decided they don't want to be bad in Lubbock anymore. And I think the thing about Texas Tech is I'm surprised they're just now hopping into this because, especially in the NIL transfer portal era, they have the perfect mix of alumni with influence within the sport and also with money. You're talking about Patrick Mahomes, of course, the biggest one, at least in the sport. But then, you know, Zach Taylor, who played for the Dolphins, Michael Crabtree, Wes Welker, Danny Amendola, many others are alumni of Texas Tech. But you also throw in the money side, the people that could be investing in them. Their alumni include Edward Whitaker Jr., the CEO of GM. That's a big deal. The CEO of General Motors is an alumni of your school, and you're not capitalizing on the transfer portal. But then you double down here. Angela Braly is a board member for ExxonMobil, and Fortune magazine named her the most powerful most powerful woman in business.
Jesus, that's a title right there.
That's what I'm saying. You should have been utilizing this the whole time.
Yeah.
You guys should have been having like Colorado-esque transfer portals the last couple of years when you have that kind of bankroll. Like, just Patrick Mahomes himself should be getting you transfers, and Michael Crabtree as well. But the fact you got that kind of bankroll behind you could be bringing in huge, huge players. The biggest thing is that they're adding players. It's not like the shiniest, nicest things. They're not bringing in the best quarterback in the portal or whatever. They're bringing in, you know, top offensive linemen like Hunter Zambrano. They're bringing in Romello Height, who was a great edge rusher at Georgia Tech last year. Bring in Lee Hunter, defensive lineman from UCF. Reggie Virgil from Miami of Ohio. Quentin Joyner, who was a great running back at USC, who never really got a shot. Bryce Pollock, who's leaving Mississippi State. They've had a great portal as well, Mississippi State. But, yeah, it just goes down the line. But they're adding, you know, it's not necessarily the flashy guys, but Texas Tech is just going out and getting three-star, four-star guys to show up on campus. And all of a sudden, you look at next season, Texas Tech is probably a favorite, if not a top three team, in the Big 12. It's all in the matter of an offseason. 24/7 has them ranked third. On3 has them ranked number one. I think it's because they haven't had to spend that much in NIL. That's why On3, because they have all their On3 industry rankings and stuff that factor into it. All my notes here, just so everybody knows, are off the On3 rankings. It's just what I was looking at. So I'll move on from Texas Tech. I do want to talk about how Ole Miss, Mizzou, and LSU are the teams that have taken the lead in the SEC portal rankings. You're looking at the Sun Belt. but yeah, Ole Miss, Mizzou, LSU, the biggest ones. Ole Miss, Princewell, Uman Milan, I think is how you say it.
Uman Milan.
Yeah, Uman Milan. From Nebraska is such a huge pickup. I do love that Nebraska's two best edge rushers left, him and then the other one went to Florida State. But then you also have like offensive line transfers in from Arkansas, as well as a tight end transferring in from Arkansas. And Harrison Wallace III is a fantastic transfer in at wide receiver. Yeah, shout out Micah Pettis coming to the right side of history here. Go Noles. Dejon Stribling. A great pickup from Oklahoma State. And you can just go down the line. But we all know that Ole Miss always has a fantastic portal. But they've gone out and totally beefed up the wide receiver room. That's the biggest thing. They added so many great wide receivers in the portal. Mizzou having a very fun transfer portal, I would say. They went out. They got a great young running back. One of the top running backs in the portal, Ahmad Hardy. Damon Wilson out of Georgia was a fantastic pickup. Kevin Coleman Jr. from Mississippi State was so good. Bo Pribula probably going to be starting at quarterback. The transfer from Penn State. So many good pickups here by Mizzou in this transfer portal. I absolutely love what they did, especially because you have some big names leaving in the draft. Mizzou did a fantastic job. And then, of course, LSU having a good portal, but that's kind of standard. Patrick Payton. Leading the charge, which I think Patrick Payton's a fraud, not just because he's leaving Florida State, but because people were calling him a top five draft pick in this year's draft before the season. And Jared Verse, Braden Fisk are gone. All of a sudden, Patrick Payton got like two sacks all year. Just saying, seems like a fraud.
Almost every offensive line was doubling him, which I doubt.
Yeah. Well, they kind of. He definitely got some attention. But a great porter for LSU. I also want to talk about this. Rutgers, out of nowhere. Great portal for Rutgers.
What conference are they in?
They're in the Big Ten. they brought in 3 4-stars and 8 3-stars out of fucking nowhere. Shout out to Rutgers. DT Sheffield
and they're getting
from
all
North
the basketball
Texas.
Commits? They got money hidden
yeah,
somewhere.
Yeah, no. Well, they're in New Jersey.
True.
They've got the mafia behind them. Shout out Piscataway, New Jersey. But yeah, DT Sheffield is a fantastic pickup. If you guys watched the college football show this season, you know how much I talk about North Texas. He was so good for North Texas. But yeah, they pretty much, the Rutgers went out to the group of five, and they were just like, give us all your 3 stars. Like, they went to like every good group of five school from last year, and they were just like, yeah, let's go. Shout out Rutgers. Shout out Brett Bielema.
That's a cool name.
Sorry, Brett Bielema is at Illinois. Who, Greg Schiano, sorry. Yeah, Tycool Hill is a first name.
That's his first name.
Lumen is his last name.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. Bright future for Lumen.
Tycool Hill.
Yeah. But did you get the pun? Lumen, like lights?
Yes, yeah.
I do want to bring this up before we talk about just kind of the top transfers by position. You had two teams that were that have been, for the past couple of years, typically high-ranked portal teams that really dropped down in the rankings. Colorado, the biggest one. Last year, they finished the portal number two. So far, they're number 32 in On3's rankings. That's kind of insane.
Probably because people don't know if Deion's staying.
There's so many factors in there. First of all, yes, they went out and got Caden Salter in the portal. Whatever. But they are recruiting better. It just feels like there's still a lot of things to address, but I agree with you. I think a lot of it does have to do with the uncertainty of Deion Sanders' future in Boulder. I can't help but think that's probably the main reason. And also the fact that it hasn't necessarily worked out. Like they played really well this year for the expectations, but, you know, it hasn't been a great experiment. And then Florida State is the other one. Last year we finished number three in the transfer portal, and so far we're 23rd. We've brought in a lot of transfers that I'm very happy about. I just think we really struck out at quarterback. We'll have to see if Thomas Cassianos is good, but I think it's probably a miss there. And we're probably not looking at the best season, but hopefully it's more than two wins. That's all I care about. I did see a TikTok that was like biggest downgrades in college football. Jordan Travis to DJ Uiagalelei is like the craziest downgrade you could ever find. Like, I think it almost evens out. I think it's worse. I think it almost evens out with Bryce Young to Jalen Milroe. Because, like, Milroe's pretty good, much better than DJ, but, like, Bryce Young was a Heisman winner, national champion. Yeah. Like, that's a pretty big downgrade to...
Jalen Milroe is exactly who the Eagles need as a backup.
That's facts. He would work perfectly in that team.
That way they don't have to let Jalen Hurts get his ass touched as much.
Yeah.
He might like it. Who knows? But yeah, they could just have Jalen Milroe do the same thing, and he'll be fine.
Yeah. I mean,
that's all he does
pretty
anyways.
Good. Okay, yeah, I just want to quickly run through these top transfers by position. At quarterback, Carson Beck heading to Miami from Georgia. John Mateer heading from Washington State to Oklahoma. And then, to me, Darian Mensah was probably third, in my opinion. But he's going from Tulane to Duke. You also have a couple other ones. Fernando Mendoza heading from Cal to Indiana. And then Croman Hoke heading from Florida State to Mississippi State. We also, Florida State did just have a 2026 decommit at quarterback today. So that's great. Things really turning up for us. Yeah, Connor Wagman's a weird one going from A&M to Houston. He never really did anything, in my opinion. Miller Moss is interesting. I think he could be pretty good with Jeff Brohm at Louisville. Jackson Arnold to Auburn stinks. That's fucking hot ass. I've never seen Jackson Arnold impress me by throwing the ball.
Neither is Peyton Thorne.
That's a great point.
It can't be much worse.
No, it won't be much worse. It's just, it's not an impressive transfer, especially when you brought in the best wide receiver in the portal in Eric Singleton. I guess we'll go ahead and do wide receivers. I was going to do running backs first. But Eric Singleton going from Auburn, or going from Georgia Tech to Auburn. Also, KC Concepcion, or Kevin Concepcion, heading from NC State to Texas A&M is huge. Absolutely huge. I think before the season, I had him as like top two, top three wide receiver in the ACC going into the year, and he was fantastic again. Just NC State just kind of underperformed, but a great move for him to go to Texas A&M. And then Nick Anderson heading to LSU, a big one. You also have Zachariah Branch going to Georgia, which is huge. Deuce Robinson, I'm so excited about this man.
Deuce Robinson,
6'6", 220. Not exactly Johnny Wilson, and not nearly as small as Keon Coleman, which is crazy to call Keon Coleman small, but 6'6", 220 makes him small. I'm very excited for Deuce Robinson. I really hope that he's very good. Dane Key as well to Nebraska is a great pickup. But, yeah, Nick Anderson, one of my favorites as well. A lot of great wide receivers that left in the portal. Yeah, they're pairing him up with Micah Hudson and some guys that are already there at A&M. It's going to be some great weapons for Marcel Reed. Noah Thomas as well, 6'6", 200, going from A&M to Georgia. A good pickup for them. Running back, my favorite guy in the portal, Mekhi Hughes, out of Tulane heading to Oregon. I think he is going to have such a huge impact. And then Ahmad Hardy making the move from, I think, ULM is where he was at last year, heading to Mizzou. I think that's one of the biggest transfers you'll find. Maude Hardy there, ULM to Mizzou. You also have Justice Haynes heading to Michigan, which is like a giant move. I don't know if everybody's really paying attention to that move, but it's huge because he should have been getting playing time at Alabama, especially a lot more than he was getting. He's going to get so much love in Michigan. Wayshon Parker as well, from Wazoo to Utah, is a good one. Fluff Bothwell, I think, might end up the best transfer running back you'll find this year, from South Alabama to Mississippi State. Him and Croman Hoke with the wide receivers that they've brought in, I'm extremely excited to see what Jeff Lebby can do in year two with Mississippi State. I think that's all I've got for the running backs. Let's go to the defensive side of the ball. Corner, a couple guys. Dakario Davis heading from Arizona to Washington. Meanwhile, you have Thaddeus Dixon heading from Washington to UNC, which I thought was kind of a weird move. It just felt a little backwards to make that move at corner. You also have Ethan O'Connor heading to Miami, which I thought was like such a good move. Such a great move. Xavier Lucas to Miami, which is the one that has the lawsuit pending, could be a little bit interesting. Julian Humphrey from Georgia to A&M is a big move. Dylan Tienemann as well, Thieneman.
It's probably Tienemann.
Yeah, I think it's Tienemann. Never happened.
Careful how you say that.
Going from Purdue to Oregon. I think he's technically a safety, but that one is a huge deal. He's a great player. On the edge, Damon Wilson heading to Mizzou. Clev Lubin to Louisville is a huge move that I don't think a lot of people even know who Clev Lubin is, but he's a great defensive end or edge rusher. You also have Will Helt, which I think is a great name for a defensive end. Will Helt heading to Clemson is a great move. We already talked about this one earlier. Prince Will, I can never say it. I'm pretty good with
Uman Malin.
Thank you. I'm pretty
there
good
a
with
soccer
the
player with that name.
Oh, fair. I'm pretty good with pronunciation simply, but his gets me. There's a ton of good edge rushers. James Williams is that Nebraska edge rusher that's heading to Florida State that I had mentioned earlier. A lot of good edge rushers and defensive linemen. Bear Alexander heading to his fourth school, I believe. Still has the Georgia logo tattered on his bicep.
Oh, that's that guy.
Yeah, that's Bear Alexander. A couple other guys just hit random positions. You got Lee Hunter heading to Texas Tech. I think we talked about him, the defensive lineman. And Max Clair, the tight end heading to Ohio State, I think is a fantastic move as well. I think that's all I really wanted to highlight here for the transfer portal. Let's check back in on the Bills-Chiefs game. It's a tie ball game, 29-29, 5 minutes, 40 seconds on the clock. Travis Kelce just got himself a first down. Curtis Samuel getting the touchdown for Buffalo. Kelce getting a little bit of action finally, getting them a first down here. Got the ball in there. Looks like the 36, maybe? Yeah, 36-yard line. Or on the Bills, 36-yard line, rather. Yeah, we'll have to see what the Chiefs can do here. This could be a huge drive. Bills looking for a big stop because not necessarily field goal territory for Butker from right here. Actually, you probably go for it if you get the next couple yards, but without the first down, we'll see. how far are we in, Nathan?
Not even an hour.
I thought we were going to get to an hour. I thought I spent enough time.
I got something if you want.
Yeah, let's do it.
Talk about.
Let's do it.
I saw a tweet that's a what if, and it's if NFL divisions were reimagined as areas.
Okay. I like that.
So take a look at this graphic. I'm going to explain it while you kind of look it over. So basically, they grouped them up by geographical region. So we have the Pacific Division, which would be the Seahawks, the 49ers, the Rams, and the Chargers. You have the Big Sky, which would be the Chiefs, the Broncos, the Raiders, and the Cardinals. You have the Great Lakes West, which would be Minnesota, Green Bay, Chicago, and Indianapolis. You have the South, which would be Tennessee, Dallas, Houston, and New Orleans. You have the Atlantic, which would be the Falcons, the Jaguars, the Bucks, and the Dolphins. The Mid-Atlantic, which would be the Bengals, the Ravens, the Commanders, and the Panthers. The Great Lakes East, which would be the Lions, Browns, Steelers, and Bills. And the Northeast, which would be the Patriots, Jets, Giants, and Eagles.
Okay.
So a lot of the divisions actually stay very similar. They like kind of swap Pacific, one or two. Yeah, so
Pacific and Big Sky, obviously.
Yes.
Because they're such spread out.
You kind
of
swap one or two in some of these. And, you know, obviously you'd still have teams that would dominate their divisions and stuff.
Yeah.
But I think it would just be interesting.
I'll hand up. I think the Atlantic sucks.
Oh, it does.
Falcons, Jags, Bucks, Dolphins sucks.
It's just as good as the NFC South.
Yeah.
Literally, because the two best teams in the NFC South are still there.
That's true.
And the other two are not.
Yeah, and like the Mid-Atlantic is at least fun. Like, if that was a division this season, that would have been so much fun
Lamar,
to watch.
Jaden Daniels, Joe Burrow, and Bryce Young.
Yeah, like, especially with this year's Bryce Young and, like, the weirdness of the Bengals this season. And then the Ravens are obviously awesome. And the Commanders.
Great Lakes East would be amazing.
Yeah, Great Lakes East would be crazy. Other, like, the Browns, maybe, sometimes.
You could have three teams make the playoffs in that division.
Yeah, no, I like that one a lot. But the problem is that, like, especially in the NFL, division rivals are so deeply rooted. Yeah. It feels like treason to take the Lions away from the Bears, Packers, and Vikings. And, like, it feels wrong to take the Eagles away from the Cowboys, even though they're so far apart. Those two teams being in the same division just makes things interesting. But, like, I don't hate
Hate this either.
I think if you took away rivals
are also now in the area.
Yes.
No matter what. So,
it makes your fans can travel easier. Yes. That definitely makes a lot of
Eagles
sense.
Eagles fans don't have to travel to Dallas.
Yeah. It is
those
so
are
funny.
In the same geographical division though. Yeah. They're both in what? The AFC or the
What were you saying?
East, right?
Which teams?
The Eagles and the Cowboys.
Yeah, the NFC East.
Somehow the Cowboys are in the East.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. This eliminates that and just
the Cowboys are further west than the Chiefs.
Yeah. Which is crazy.
Yeah. But then, like, you also, you know, you have, like, the Titans are in the south.
Yeah, but who else would you pull?
No, that one makes sense. I do think there's,
that
like...
That division also looks quite stinky.
Yeah, the South is a little bit rough, especially right now.
Yeah, right now that division
Titans and Saints doesn't look very good.
Texans,
like the Texans and the Cowboys.
Ooh.
I guess we didn't even talk about. There was a lot more like hiring news and stuff. I'll probably update everybody on that on Friday's episode. Brian Schottenheimer hiring is so bad for the Cowboys.
Might lose more games.
it's such a bad hire. Like, I saw a list, some Cowboys fan put it out. It's like a list of all of his jobs, and it was like, this job, the worst their offense has been in 15 years. Like, like down the list, and it's just like each job he's had, it was just like the worst of every one of them.
I saw somebody grading all the new hires, and so it was like A- for this guy, B+ for this guy.
Schottenheimer's an F.
Schottenheimer, LMFAO.
Yeah.
That's all it said.
No, that hiring is so bad. So fucking
crazy.
Bad.
So who do you think? I want you to pick a division winner from each division. One? Doesn't have to be like
this
who
season?
Won this division this year.
Okay.
But like, because you got to think they would play these teams twice.
Yeah.
So
it definitely mixes things up a lot.
So who do you think? Say we'll go this next year.
Yeah.
Don't think about rookies or anything like that. Who would win the division?
Okay. I'm gonna go with the Bucks in the Atlantic.
Makes sense.
I'm in a weird spot with the Falcons right now.
What about the Dolphins? You don't like them?
No, I don't like the Dolphins. I already said it. Mike McDaniel's on the hottest seat in the NFL. And Tyreek's leaving. I know that. I don't have to wonder about that one for next season. The Mid-Atlantic's fun. It would be the Ravens, but the Mid-Atlantic is fun.
Mid-Atlantic would be
I think the Commanders and Bengals both would have been in the mix. Northeast, obviously the Eagles, especially with how all those franchises are going right now. It's definitely the Eagles by like
the Patriots,
so far. The Eagles might have won that division in like week 12.
The Patriots would be the dark horse in that division for sure.
Yeah, even the Giants. Giants would kind of be the dark horse next year because they might have a crazy good draft. Great Lakes East is tough.
Yeah, that
Bills, Lions, the Bills beat them this season.
That could somehow every team go +500.
Yeah, and that's kind of how the AFC North typically works when you're looking at Ravens, Steelers, Bengals, and Browns. I think I have to go with the Lions for next year.
One of those teams is currently playing.
I know, and they might win. But
they still tied.
But look, the Lions, very good team in the regular season. I guess the Bills did beat them in the regular season, but I think I'd go with the Lions for it next year. I guess we'll have to see how the coordinator jobs get filled, because that's all gone. Great Lakes West, I'll take the Packers. I don't know if the Vikings will be all that next season. And I don't think the Bears are going to take that big of a step.
I don't know if they can handle the Colts twice.
The Colts. I don't know if the Colts can handle the Colts twice. South, I'll take the Cowboys for next year.
Really?
No, I'll take the Texans. I tried to do something there, but no. The Texans are clearly going to be the best team of that bunch. Big Sky Chiefs.
Hard not to.
They made it easier.
Unless Denver makes some.
They made it easier by switching out the Cardinals for the Chargers.
Yeah.
Because the Chargers are actually going to be good.
Well, Denver is definitely a possibility.
That's true.
Depending on
That's
who
true.
They get in the draft.
And then the Pacific, I'd take the Chargers. Love Jim Harbaugh.
Somehow the Pacific seems like one of the most boring divisions.
No.
You don't think so?
No.
I feel like
the 49ers, Rams, and Chargers are all so like frisky. You know what I mean? Like, they could be anything.
I guess.
The Seahawks are whatever.
I don't know why it seems boring. I couldn't explain it. It just feels like...
I think the most boring of the bunch is probably the South or the Great Lakes West, oddly enough.
No, because you still have three teams that have this deep
history. The Colts really stink that division up, though.
Yeah. I mean, especially when you have the Great Lakes East right there.
Yeah.
And it's like, damn, that division is good. Yeah, and then it's like the Great Lakes West kind of.
That's a good point.
The Northeast kind of stinks, but you know the fans of those teams would all kill each other, so.
Yeah, I hate the name. Great Lakes East and Great Lakes West. That sucks.
But it makes sense. But
yeah.
I think the Northeast would be the scariest of it. That'd be like being a certain kind of person and playing in Russian soccer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You get that vibe as well?
Yep.
All right. Just check.
Yep. Well, Boston.
Yeah, and Philly.
And Philly.
Philly is not nice people.
No. Nope.
Antonio Brown stole somebody's tweet, as he does, that said, there should be a slur for people or Philadelphia sports fans.
Yeah. He's right.
Not that we would say it, of course.
No.
Because nobody should, but.
No, I wouldn't say it. Write it? Like, I was telling, Colin called me earlier to check in.
Nice.
I don't know why. He was checking in on me. I was like, you're the sick one.
Yeah.
But he was like, I think I have to root for the Eagles in the Super Bowl if they're playing the Chiefs. I'm like, I want Philadelphia sports fans to suffer for everything. They're the worst.
Yeah.
And the Phillies.
I did text it today. I said, I think I hate the Eagles more than I hate the Chiefs now.
Oh, yeah. I do.
Even though...
If the Chiefs and the Eagles are playing, what's the score right now?
I think it's still 29-29.
Is it?
It's on commercial, but
okay, we're at commercial.
I've not gotten any touchdown notifications.
Okay,
so.
But like I think that if it's Chiefs-Eagles, I'd rather see the three-peat. I think I really would.
Yeah, a little part of me wants to. Oh, the Chiefs hit a field goal.
32-29 Chiefs. How much time on the clock for the Bills?
Oh, wait a minute.
What?
This might be ball game.
What? Well, it's a commercial.
I think the GameCast just updated for me.
Okay.
I think... Josh Allen just went for it on 4th and 5 and didn't get it with 1:54 left.
Yeah, that's probably ball game then. How many times? Okay, they have all their timeouts. Okay, we'll see how that goes. We'll keep monitoring it. Let's you got anything else for me? If not, we can play a Weddle or something.
Do you want to talk at all about the Senior Bowl games?
Yeah, we can talk some Senior Bowl stuff. I haven't gotten to pay too much attention. The only thing I saw was Brian Daboll dapping up Shedeur Sanders. But also, like, things happen at the Senior Bowl. I want to remind people of that. Like, the interactions that teams have with players and front office members have with other front office members, like like we saw it in Hard Knocks offseason with the Giants. That's how the Brian Burns deal got started for the Giants. Was the GM of the Panthers and Joe Shane, the GM of the Giants, are friends. They're sitting there talking, and just out of nowhere, the GM of the Panthers goes, "What would you give me for Brian Burns?" And that deal happened. Like,
you got to remember that every team is there.
Exactly.
Every
oh,
team's
yeah.
got
There's
something.
Allen. A crazy good blitz by the Chiefs. Oh, he just dropped it. Kincaid just drops the pass.
Like,
it would have got them
the
first
down.
Every
team is at the Senior Bowl. All these players are at the Senior Bowl.
Yeah.
And it's
oh,
like,
what was the flag here?
Oh, I don't know. I never saw. I know that the Chiefs do have the ball.
Okay. Okay. Hmm. Damn. But, might be it for the Bills.
Oh, and I think the game might be over.
Okay.
At least very soon.
Yeah.
See if I can hit a refresh for us.
Yeah, it might.
And I think the Senior Bowl, I think me and you were talking about it before we started recording, it can have a lot of implications on draft stock.
Definitely. Definitely.
Which is kind of like you don't
especially
think
for
it
like
would.
Especially for the guys that maybe like you know had a little bit of injury last year, or
borderline,
yeah, like
day
borderline
two
guys. Yeah, like it could definitely be the difference between like day one, day two, or like even you know like day three and day two, which is like a huge gap between those two for a guy who. You know, he'll be at the combine. The combine's the big deciding factor, but like you might move from round 4 to 3, but then if you play well at the Senior Bowl, but if you do really well at the combine, you could move from like round 4 to 2.
Yeah, exactly.
You never really know.
But I think having, you know, it's not film and it's you're playing against the other best people going to the draft or, you know, graduating, whatever. Yeah. So it's like you really get to see this person play against. Mm-hmm. Basically, it's, you know, all-star lineups, essentially.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just like, oh, you played against Ohio State and had good numbers. Cool. This is, oh, you played against the best interior offensive lineman and beat his ass.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, oh, shit.
Yeah, and the practice. The practices are a huge deal.
That's where all the clips have been coming right now. Someone who I've been seeing looking real good is Kobe Bryant from Kansas, the cornerback. Been locking up some of your favorite receivers in practice.
He's definitely a guy with, like, second, first-round grades, so... Certainly going to be a
so
conversation
he
topic.
He kind of stands out in the game. Like, you could see Kobe Bryant's name get called late first round, early second.
Isn't today the anniversary of Kobe Bryant's passing? Was that today? Was it the 26th?
Is it?
I think so.
Normally, I'm very up to date on it. Yeah, it is.
Yeah. I don't know if I think I've told this story on the podcast. The way that I found out about this was at a scrimmage for Frisbee, for Ultimate.
Oh, so you found out about it late.
What?
It happened during the middle of the day.
Yeah. It was a scrimmage. Well, it was on a Sunday.
I don't think it was.
I'm pretty sure it was a Sunday. Or maybe a Saturday. But I know we went midday for this scrimmage. Or like maybe it was in the morning. We were playing Wheeler in the scrimmage, absolutely running their shit. First time we'd played as an organized team ever. Most of us, first time we'd ever played like a real game against actual opponents. And like...
Yeah, it was a Sunday.
Yeah, I randomly like, I came off the field like just like a substitution. I just like clicked my phone real quick. My phone was just blowing up. And like I was the person that told the whole team... It was so weird.
Deliver the bad news.
Yeah, it sucked. Yeah, Kincaid, just a full-out drop. Could have been a first down, and potentially you win this game if you catch that, because you get right by field goal territory.
There's a possibility still.
Yeah, you still have a chance, but...
Timeout.
Yeah, so. You have to get the stop.
You're probably going to get the ball back
but,
if you stop them.
You're going to bleed a ton of clock on third down. That's the problem.
I was going to say, that's the thing. When do you call this last timeout?
Well, you call this timeout as soon as they go down, for sure. Yeah.
Oh, good stop, though. Quick stop there.
You only burn about 4 seconds there, 3 seconds.
That was good.
But the thing is they're going to run it here, and then you bleed 40 seconds.
It's just on the GameCast update, they are not going to run it.
They're not? Nope. They're going to kneel? Or they run backwards a lot?
Of course.
Really? Are they about to throw it?
Indeed they are.
Fake? Let's go. I like this. I think that's...
The Chiefs are going to the Super Bowl, basically.
Okay, so the Chiefs are going to win. Congrats, Kansas City Chiefs. You have won the AFC Invitational.
I hope Mahomes kicks Arrowhead. The shit out of the Eagles.
Yeah, me too. Again. I think I'm rooting for the Chiefs.
Start the three.
I almost just call them the Patriots.
Start the three-peat and end the three-peat on them.
Yeah.
That's kind of funny.
Yeah. It would be really funny to run it here and then kick the field goal. Would have been hilarious.
You want to see something even funnier, Grayson? Watch this.
They're just going to throw for like a touchdown. Oh, man. Samaje Perine, and he stays in bounds too.
Yep,
and that wins the game. Great work by Kansas City, capitalizing on just like a couple of mistakes here and there from the Bills to win that game. Wow. Well, we've got our Super Bowl, a rematch of Super Bowl 57. This time in New Orleans, Kansas City taking on Philadelphia. It's gonna be fun, very fun.
Game just went final.
All right, game's final. Chiefs Eagles Super Bowl. I'm excited. It's not the most exciting matchup we could have gotten. I'll say that. But I think it'll be good. I think this will be a good game. I did say this. I wish Jayden Daniels could have gotten there so we could see, and Josh Allen for that matter, extraordinary quarterback play. Patrick Mahomes has not been like super entertaining, at least to his standards, recently. And Jalen Hurts just, he was good today. But I
interception
don't know
today, though.
Yeah, that's true. I quarterback wise, selfishly, I wanted to see Josh Allen versus Jayden Daniels. That would have been so much fun.
So cool.
So much fun. But I think this.
I have a feeling that would be
all around
Super Bowl when that would turn out to be like Georgia TCU when the Bills winning a billion to one.
Yeah,
not one, but maybe three.
Could have been one. that's more likely than a billion.
That is true. It definitely is. Yeah. What do you think we'll see first? Somebody finish a game with one or somebody finish a game over 100?
Ooh. Probably 100.
That's kind of what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I think.
But at the same time, they could happen in the same game.
Yeah. That's also
that
true.
That could be the way it happens because if you're scoring that much.
Yeah.
There's a chance you get a safety on a 2-point conversion.
And also, the way the math works out, you might have to be going for 2-point conversions to get the 100.
Yeah. Well, you don't have to get. Oh, I'm not.
Yeah, but I'm saying if you wanted to just
get it
barely
fast.
Get it.
Exactly.
You get two points.
It's definitely possible that could happen in the same game.
It is.
Which would be really fucking cool.
Ridiculous.
Imagine losing the game, 104-1.
Yeah, fuck that.
Retire.
Everyone's
fired.
I'll pass.
But also, fuck the coach of the other team for keeping the starters in to just let them do that.
Definitely. That's bullshit.
Whoever is on the losing team of that, all of you, gone. Don't even show up to the facility. It's going to be like that video where the code doesn't work. You're not getting
Jamal
in.
Adams.
You're not getting in at all.
No, not at all.
The entire practice squad is getting the chance to play next game to see if they can do any better, and they probably will.
Yeah, you guys have to find your way back home.
Yeah, don't
if you go on the road and lose like that, hell no. Dude.
Don't get on the jet. No. Don't nothing.
We're scrapping the jet.
All your bank accounts are drained. Yeah. Everything.
Sorry, guys.
Everyone, all the practice squad, get your identity, your money, everything.
Yep.
I'd be surprised if your wife stays with you.
Did you have anything else for the Senior Bowl?
Not really.
Okay.
I just kind of seen some
how far are
stuff
we
in? Here. We're about an hour 18.
I think we'll just wrap it up there. Let's play the Weddle.
We'll play the Weddle real quick. Since the games are over.
Yeah.
What do you want to start with, Grayson?
I think we got to go with somebody that played today.
Okay.
I think that's where we have to start.
Ads all over the screen as well.
So many Weddle, Best Buy ads. Jesus.
Need KitchenAid?
Let's go with the guy who gave us some entertaining stuff today, Frankie Louvu.
I don't think defensive players are on here.
Fuck. Okay.
It's skill positions.
On the offense. How about Xavier Worthy?
All right.
Wide receiver.
Taller than 5'11", NFC, older than 21, number higher than 1.
Probably a bad judgment to go with Xavier Worthy.
Yeah.
Being a young player that wears number 1.
And he's short.
Yeah, and he's short.
But he's at least 6 foot or 6'1".
Yeah, yeah, not too tall of a wide receiver. I'm going to go with Chris Olave. He might not have played enough games to be on here.
He's not.
Okay.
What else you got? You probably want to go like middle age but wise.
JSN. Wide receiver, okay. Not in the West.
So he's 6'1".
Yeah, 6'1", which I don't
older
know.
Older than 22, because you yeah. guessed a guy who's 1 year older.
Yeah, yeah, I didn't think about that part.
And higher than 11 jersey number.
Okay. Okay. That higher than 11 does help a little bit.
A little.
Let's see.
It could be like, I mean, we know it's NFC and they're not in the West.
About like Nick Westbrook-Ikhine. Wait, no. He's in the AFC. Yeah, he's in the AFC.
Mike Evans is too tall.
Not in the West. Yeah. Not in the West. NFC North wide receiver above the number 11. What number does DJ Moore wear?
2.
Fuck. Keenan Allen, 6'1"? Oh, wait, no, he wears 13, so he would show up here.
Jameson Williams? Doesn't he wear like
no, he's young, something? Though.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he is.
Jettas?
He's 24, 25.
It's tough.
Throw him out there just to get some.
Yeah, let's do Justin Jefferson. I doubt it's him, but we'll run that. Holy shit, it's
Justin Jefferson. All right, well.
That was pretty good.
Yeah. Grayson did say he knows
cool.
ball.
I do there know ball. I must say I do.
6'1", 25 years old. Where's number 18?
Yeah, I wanted to start going like super high numbers, but I was like, eh.
Yeah, like normally if I try to get somebody around that like 11,
yeah.
14,
yeah.
You know, the Amon Ra's, the mm-hmm. A.J. Brown.
Yeah, if you get somebody in like that mid-teens where it's like, you know, you're yeah. pretty close.
You know, you either need to go for one of those guys who wears 87
yeah.
or whatever.
Yeah.
Or you need to go a different direction. Plus, guessing young guys is normally real scary.
Yeah.
I yeah. normally try to get somebody who's been in the league a couple years.
I think the
like
biggest, the biggest problem is that wide receiver, a lot of the best wide receivers are young.
Yeah, well, then you have Mike Evans.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
you have like
Tyreek Hill.
Yeah, you have those couple
Adams.
Who are like, but then normally yeah. they have like a weird factor that makes them obvious, like Mike Evans being 6'6".
Yeah, exactly.
So it's like, okay, well, if he's taller than 6'3", he's probably Mike
yeah.
Evans. Or
yeah.
like, you can kind of tell.
I also, especially a wide receiver, because there is a number of wide receivers who wear 0. Guessing a guy that's number 1 and getting lower would have been.
Yeah, it's like, all right, who
yeah.
wears it?
Yeah, there's
what
only so many zeros.
Do we have?
All right, guys. Well, that was a fun episode. Obviously, we wish that we had Colin here. He'll be back next week. By the way, I keep forgetting to say this at the start of these episodes, so I like really need to start doing it. We're gonna live stream for the Super Bowl. From here, on Super Bowl Sunday, start to end on the Super Bowl. So that's going to be a lot of fun, and that will be our second to last episode before we take 2 weeks off from the podcast. We'll be putting out 2 videos during that. We already decided on 1 video. We're going to have a guess that all-time NFL team by the college. That video did awesome when we did the NFL teams, like the active NFL teams. We thought all-time NFL teams would be really fun. So we're going to have that coming out during that break, and then trying to figure out what we want to do for the other video. But definitely look forward to that. Like we've already kind of talked about here, it's a much needed break from 2 times a week doing the podcast, long form kind of stuff. Much needed break in quite a downtime across all the leagues. So we'll hit the ground running in March and won't look back from there. But for now, thank you guys for watching, listening, and of course subscribing on YouTube and liking this video and comment that Super Bowl prediction now that we obviously know all the teams. Oh, Nathan's got a fun fact to replace Colin with, but let me finish the promo here. Make sure you follow us on Instagram and TikTok, stay up to date with things we got going on, and then of course join the Second Short subreddit r/2nd8ndshort. rate 5 stars on the podcast platforms. Give us a follow on there. And yeah, Nathan, let's hear a fun fact.
All right. I'm going to kind of start it like Colin does, but I'm going to ask you the actual question first.
Okay.
Do you know the longest collegiate winning streak in sports?
Was it UConn women's basketball?
It is not.
Mm.
It is actually. Okay. Georgia Gwinnett College.
No.
Tennis.
Gotcha.
173
minutes. Oh, yeah, you said collegiate.
Matches.
Yeah, probably.
Yes, it's all division.
Yeah.
173 tennis teams matches in a row.
It's unbelievable.
From 2014 to 2023.
Georgia Gwinnett, by the way, NAIA tennis.
Yes. They have won 10 straight national titles.
Crazy.
Only one they didn't win was 2020 because there was no title play because it was COVID. 2014 all the way till now.
Unreal.
They have won every single one. And nobody really gets close. They kind of just destroy people.
Yeah, NAIA tennis is an interesting thing, too, because it can be former pros.
Yes.
But also, like, most of those guys, even if they play really well, they probably don't end up becoming much.
No. One of the guys from the team that was actually on the team while I went to this school is now the head tennis coach at Georgia, who is a very good Division One tennis program. Georgia Gwinnett tennis, insane.
Yeah.
Normally those guys are 23, 24 years old.
Yeah.
Absolute menaces from
a different country.
Yeah, different country. When I was there was not one person from the US on the team. There's now two. So they're making progress.
Somewhere.
Yep.
Yeah.
It used to be dominated by Eastern European guys.
Hmm. Interesting.
And a couple Western Asian countries, but they were insane. And they were all like 6'5".
Yeah.
Because tennis players, for some reason, are freakishly tall.
They're all pretty tall.
Yeah.
For the most part.
Insane.
Good fun fact.
Thank you.
Good stuff. Thanks to Nathan for producing the episode and contributing throughout the episode. Big thanks to him for filling in with Colin being out. And I will see you guys with Luke on Friday. Next week, me and Colin, we were talking about this on the phone. Next week, me and Colin are going to do all of our picks for the NFL honors. Cause that, those awards will be out on Thursday night. So it would be kind of redundant for me and Luke to do it. And they come out before the episode comes out. So me and Colin will be doing that, on Monday's episode next week. So a lot to look forward to. Obviously the Super Bowl live stream in 2 weeks. We have all this stuff to look forward to, and then we're going to go on the break. We got some fun videos that'll come out, and then it's draft time pretty much. We're going to have like 2 months essentially of draft coverage, and MLB opening day will be less than a month away. We'll have the combine, which wraps up the day that we come back. A lot of fun stuff to look forward to. So please make sure you're subscribed and liked and follow and blah, 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 across all the other stuff. And enjoy the week. A lot of fun stuff. And we'll catch you guys later. Peace.
Peace.